We're holding here in the middle of Perek Vav, I think. We're just Perek Vav. We start Perek Vav, yeah?
Exactly, at the beginning of Perek Vav.
Okay, so he's going to begin to talk about the reason for Gashmistic mitzvahs. In other words, what's the reason why a physical mitzvah could possibly give you some sort of ruchnistic elevation. In other words, with the understanding that ruchnius is a very elevated part of a person, the sham and so on, how can we say that mitzvahs that are just physical activities, shapness, shchit and so on, affect it anyway? Okay. Yesh mibne adam, v'heim anshei chikri lev ha'olchim edachar philosophim. There are people who are philosophical nature, and they need to have some sort of rational explanation for everything. In other words, I guess the point is, they have a set of axioms that are born of the physical reality that they're part of, and they have these problems. Tamur b'neim me'oid binyan ha-mitzvah ha-maisiyas, she'yisk odem atzlochad nitzchis bo'ilum ha-nibdol, they have a real problem with how could it be that a person is zeicha to any type of nitzchiyistik olam haba through doing an act which is physical. So, I can understand that if I take wood and put it together, I'm going to get a table. It's one system to the same system. The only thing that we have that's similar to ruchnius is thought of some sort. And therefore, by shaking a lulav, which is very physical and so on, how does that translate to a olam mitzvahs? V'amru, ki mayol maisa gashmel nefesh liktos ha'idei zeh, she'tichye netzach b'olam ha'nivdol, b'mokam she'ein shem maisa gashmi. What's the conversion process that takes a physical act and somehow converts it to something of value in a ruchnistic world that is doesn't have anything physical whatsoever? I once heard just a very, very fascinating anecdote. There was somebody sitting shiva once, a friend of mine, on his father. His father was a Talmud Chacham, who in his later years in life got involved in smuggling Iranian Jews out of Iran, helping them and putting himself in tremendous danger. I don't know, he went to different countries to get there, and so on and so forth. He did this under the aegis of some organization. And at some point, years into it, they fired him. And the son was telling us at the shiva why. He said what happened was they wanted, in order to do fundraising, to make this public. Now, they obviously weren't going to make public details that would endanger anybody, but they just wanted this person to be honored in some way, and so on and so forth. And he refused absolutely, and they got very upset, and then until finally they fired him, and he was very broken. He retired, basically, and then he got sick, and so on. So he asked his father once, I understand you didn't like it, but why were you so upset about it? Why were you so crazy? And you refused at the price of just dropping it. Didn't hurt you a lot. You were very upset with it. So he told him that a lot of times he would go on the border. He would be crossing through something like Russia. And in many of these countries, there was a law that when you cross the border, you needed to exchange your dollars for local currency. So he said, I would take a good $100 bill or a good $200 bill and exchange it for some real garbage, rubles in those days and so on, nothing. And he said the idea of taking good money and just exchanging it for trash really, really bothered him. He said, I've done a lot of Mesiras Nefesh. I've done a lot of things endangering my life. And I'm going to take that and I'm going to convert it into newspaper headlines and a picture. He said, that's terrible, and he wouldn't do it. It was very interesting, like he said, I'm taking something so valuable, and it'll convert it into just another gashmistic thing. That was the way he looked at it. But anyway, he asked the other way around. How is a physical ma'isa mitzvah? And the truth is, the Rambam, for instance, he'll speak about the Rambam later. The Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim, where he puts a heavy emphasis on the understanding of Ruchnius, the deeper understandings that actually creates sort of the Ruchnius, the aspect of it, that this problem is a real problem. What does Ma'aseh Mitzvah do? It teaches us, fine. But I could learn basically just by learning about it, and certainly the Iker is not the Ma'aseh. But Yosef Zemat Mi, it says they even ask it more strongly. So at least all the mitzvahs would translate like mitzvahs of giving tzedakah, being nice, and so on and so forth. Okay, so we could translate all of these to sort of a good nefesh. So I can say it's not so much the act as much as the impressions left on the person, the midas tovas that it's given to him. He says, okay, first of all, you have all sorts of maisim that's meaningless. Shatnes, klai zroyim, shchita. Then he asks almost a paradox. If cutting an animal from the neck is something good to do, then why in Beis HaMikdash do we cut it from the back? And if it's something not good to do, then why do we do shchita in chulin? They attempted to give all sorts of reasons and all sorts of understandings that are not Torahic, and he said they're not even chachma. V'yoydei Torah aleihem bolvad niglu matzpuni chachma b'emes, and it's only yoydei Torah who really understand this emes. Let's just add a point of explanation for this. Does he mean to say simply that the chachmas, the secular philosophers, didn't understand and chacham understood better than them, like it's just kind of ruach hakodesh of sorts? I don't think that's the point that he's making. And he says it in different places when he speaks about Chochmah Nushis and not Chochmah Nushis. I think what he means is as follows. When I say I'm explaining something to you, what does that mean? It works as follows. There are certain axioms that you are familiar with, comfortable with, or best said, subscribe to. So for instance, that two things cannot exist in one place at the same time, it can be proven, it's an axiom, and you feel very comfortable with that axiom. And many axioms like that you're very comfortable with. So anytime I need to explain something else, what I'm doing is reducing it to these axioms. So if you ask me how a car works, how do I explain how a car works? Well, the idea that a wheel turns is familiar to you. The idea that something that expanding is familiar to you. The idea that hot air rushes out is familiar to you. So I show you, here's hot air. Next thing is it expands, it pushes, it pulls, and so on. So every time when I explain something, what I'm doing actually is reducing it to those components that you are familiar with. There are other things, for instance, let's say a lot of the new physics, a lot of quantum physics, it doesn't reduce to any axioms that we are used to and familiar with. It doesn't. and that's why we don't feel comfortable with it. When we do explain it, we're doing two things. We're doing one of two things. Either I'm telling you, listen, I'm going to give you a set of axioms. You will find that they work. I'm not helping you understand it. I'm just giving you an instruction book, how to work with atoms at a certain level. And once we get down to a certain size, a certain unit, we're going to have different axioms, entanglement, and all sorts of strange things, events happening at the same time without any communication one to the other, and kachase, as they say in Hebrew. And what you have is not understanding, not an explanation, but a useful instruction book. That's one way of doing it. That's one. A second way of doing it is that I hopefully, by familiarizing with these axioms again and again and again, you might come to accept it, that just like gravity is something that you don't understand but you accept as axiom, these things are axioms, and at some point they become part of, just like relativity for kids who grew up with it kind of sits okay. It's sort of an idea that's been given to us and we accept it in an axiomatic way, and everything else explains itself by it. Here also, somebody who's a secular philosopher has a given set of axioms. Religious experiences, the Kedusha, Sina, Tznius, Dveikus, all of these are concepts that mean nothing to him. So there's no way I can take mitzvahs and make it sensible to him. So the only thing he can do with the mitzvahs is try to translate it to the axioms that he's familiar with. Sometimes it works a little bit, sometimes not. So for instance, let's say Shechita. So Shechita, for a secular person, the only axiom that he has as regards animal is not to cause them any suffering. So if we show that Shechita is something that causes less suffering, that's as well as I can translate it, which runs into the problem, is it better to do Arifa, is it not better to Arifa, and so on. But let's say somebody has religious axioms, the Indian of being Mevarda to Simona, whatever it is that's there, if a person has a developed ruchnistic aside to himself, then he has more elements to which to reduce Shechita to, and they reduce themselves. In the Rishonim, you have all this, you have about different types of kohos and the bria, midas adin, midas rachman, they shouldn't mix, this and that. If the axioms are there and you relate to them as reality, then there's at least what to work with. So only they have. Ve'af, ki min haroye shaloi lahashiv al shalosam klal, even though I ought not to answer at all. Why? If let's say they come along and there's more than that. When I tell you, I don't understand, Ian, I don't understand what you're doing. So there are two implications of that statement. One is, a wise man, Ian, could you please explain to me what it is that you're doing, or what you're doing is crazy, and because if I don't understand it, it doesn't mean anything, and therefore it's worthless. So the secular philosopher, when he comes along and he says to us, you know, ma chuk meila, what is this lachem, he doesn't just mean, he's not asking a question, he's actually attempting to destroy our avodah. He's saying, since it's not comprehensible, it's nonsense, and if it's nonsense, then you shouldn't be doing it. So he says, if they would look around the world and they were able to explain everything in the world, if they could give us a reason for teva on the lowest level, so then we would have an answer. We would say, we would have to answer. In other words, listen, I have an infallible system. Anything in the Bria, I can give you a perfect explanation for it. So my mind is really good, and it's taking care of everything, and the fact that this piece doesn't fit in really places the onus of explanation on you. But it's not like that. So if they were coming with the background of understanding, you know, of knowing everything that they could, and our answer is that Torah is different, we'd need to explain to them. Their question would have a logical standing to require us to answer. Ach ein advarim kach, kadvarim atirim habalachayim, afat smochim, einoisin lanasibah betam. They can't explain to us, and the truth is, even today, you know, as much as science knows, and incredible amount they know, you know, yes, there's genes, there's a cell, this and that, none of that explains how it actually blossoms into life. I mean, it's true that if you take a gene out, then you're missing something that produces a protein, but proteins, a template for protein is not life. What puts it into action? What makes it do it? How do the pieces come together, fit together? We know a fraction of what needs to be known. You know, they can tell us many things about it, but there's certainly very much that they can't. The truth is, even something like physics, you get to a point, and then the next frontier, it's not as if it's totally explained. You're always moving a step forward, and you're still left with stuff unexplained. But don't tell me we have doctors that do well and scientists. Yeah, they can deal with one in a thousand things. And it's not always 100% accurate either. So let's say we say medicine made great strides. True, but in the big picture, cancer is something that can't be cured really. Heart disease is something that can't get a handle on. The strokes, a whole bunch of things. So there is knowledge, but it's certainly nothing as if we say that they have all the answers. This is true about nature. So even if it was in nature, they would say, for instance, the argument, you know, well, the vestigial organs, you know, appendix has no use, this has no use. Well, they found out now that it has a use. They found out things that they thought had no uses, they didn't know. So if they don't have a real firm grip on the physical world, if we don't understand exactly what an animal is, then how can we understand whether Shechita or Arifa brings out the best of it? And if he wouldn't have the exact arrangement of organs and stuff, it wouldn't work. So certainly those mitzvahs which are divine in nature, they deal with divine realities, they certainly have no idea. So even if we don't know why and how could a dot on the esek determine whether you're a good person or a bad person, we don't have to know. Maybe there's so much more we don't know. It's not a raya. So if they would know everything else, then their questions would carry a lot of weight to it. They don't know, so it doesn't carry weight. So that's one point. Then he says, but he says the Maisa, we will try to explain it. Tanan. So this Mishnah actually is a Mishnah that is sort of a cornerstone for all of the discussion about time and mitzvahs and so on. So if a person says, "Okay, tibur yagirach mecha, or moide moide shaskei zaka, for come the Gemara, pish tamer moide moide, say moide twice, mesik shtei reshuyas." It sounds like there are two deities. Well, tibur zochah shmecha nami, the mashma la tibur la ra. If you say tibur zochah shmecha, it sounds like he says HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be remembered for the good he does. Mashmal says that for the bad he does, we choose to disregard it. It's not. What's the reason? One said because he's matal kina maisabracious. The charam neisha oisim midoisa rachim ben alexeris adkam. So that's the two reasons given in the Gemara. The second reason is obviously the one that's a little more important for him in what he's talking about, in whether his maisim are rachim or not. But the derech moral is that whenever he mentions the chazal, he discusses all of it. That's he's been mefarish of a chazal. So he says like this. Ubir nizeh she'ein loymal ken tzipi girach mecha demashma ki mitzvah zois tziva shem zvach mitzad shumracha ken tzipur obazeh oise chiluk upir ben etzoyim ad she'ein oylam echot ki loma yirachim al ken tzipur liracha minam acherim. The vade mem zeir shigazu chachmose kach ein ze kushi kach ein yag zeir shigazu beze dafil ba acha kamo yisha minim mchulokim ba atzman sheze min ze vze min acha kach ashe min ze noig da vze min ze noig vach aminus harachmim kol maisim lachman is bein echot im kei lo marichim al ze dafke voy ez a pyrd bechilik beminim sheish dovel bemin ze tz Hashem esbach ma shegim min achem. So he says like this. I mean, the concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu making jealousy, maisa bracious. So obviously the frogs and the cockroaches don't have the mental and emotional wherewithal to make decisions about whether they're upset that HaKadosh Baruch Hu favors birds or not. That's not what we're talking about. He says oisekina maisa bracious means that it creates an impression as if there are favoritism in the Bria, and that doesn't make any sense. Now, he says something very interesting, the Maral. If we were talking about Gzeiris, it does make sense, and let's explain why. The concept of a Gzeira is that we give an exact boundaries to different parts. In other words, we say every part of the Bria has what it is and what it's not. So an ant is not an elephant, and a tiger is not a lion, less than a tiger. In the word gzeira is like to cut, like when you chop, when you cut, when you give shape to things. So certainly HaKadosh Baruch Hu placed limitations on every Bria. And the question of why this limitation or that limitation is not a question. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave each Bria its limitations. But the Midah of Rachmim is a Midah that by its nature encompasses everything. Let's give an example, simple example. I have Talmidim, I have children. So when I am describing the limitations of each child. In other words, you should not think of being a doctor because you're not going to be able to relate to people well. And you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't that. There, I distinguish each child from the other child. But when it comes to the question of do I love my child, do I want to give to my child, that should not have any distinctions to it. Mitzad HaKadosh Baruch Hu's gzeira, mitzad his midas adin, that requires that each barrier, because it's a barrier, have limitations. And why it's certain these have these limitations, we don't know. That's not a question. But when you talk about Kadosh Baruch Hu's Rachmanis, it says V'rachman bo kol ma'asav. Rachmanis by its nature is all inclusive. So if a person says Al ken tzipo yagiyu rachamecha, that doesn't make sense that that should be on one part. Rachman is the midah Kadosh Baruch Hu where he's giving, and that includes the entire Bria and should not have been stuck by it. And if he does it, he's implying that one chelik of the Bria has a reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes it more the other, and that's wrong. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wanting and desires Bria is equal. What does affect different changes is the different levels that each Bria contains. Okay, so that's the explanation of that he makes kinah ma'aseh b'reishis. I want to, let me add one more point to this, and I think that's important to understand it. Like we said before, we're not speaking about the harsh feelings of the frog that Kadosh Baruch Hu was not merachmanet like the bird or whatever it is. It is a reflection of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's achdus, midah v'achdus, that all the chalakim of the Bria are parts of one great whole. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed parts. And he didn't need parts, is a better way to say it. The better way to say it is HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Bria so that it works as a integration of pieces rather than one solid unit. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one, the Bria is parts that come together and work a certain way. If the parts are meant to be in a certain way, there can't be friction from one part over the other. If somebody asks you, you know, I'm giving you a choice in a car, would you rather have a carburetor or transmission? What difference does it make? Either one, without either one, there ain't no car. I mean, I can have chrome or not chrome. I could have leather seats and not leather seats, but I can't choose between an engine or transmission. Either one, it's just is worthless. So since the Bria, if the Bria were different pieces jockeying for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's attention, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu could make use of birds without frogs or fish without birds, so then there's kinah. In other words, it's one vis-a-vis the other. It's a sort of adversarial. But it's not like that. It's all the bits and pieces are needed together to come together and create a certain, to create one unit. So we can't have kinah. Kinah means where one thing is at the expense of the other thing. One thing is getting some, the other doesn't. I need to take care of every part of the vital part of the car, or else there's nothing going. So the expression of all of these things are together. Olaman de Yama Shoisim Midos of Rach Ben Alexeros Pirush Shen Rosh Midas Hashem Spar Shumanik Oloma Bit Midos Ade Rachmim Rach Bit Dinu Bixera Kagzeru Lefichach Mosa Yisbarach Vedoveze Roy Lemelach Ashamoylach Alakoil Lehanik Beemes of Yosha Avla Rachmanis Eboy Midas Emes Kimurachim Afshene Roy Ve'im ku yisparach oise bevare rachmi ma'briyos. Mikomu koim ika mida shi betmidus umidus adin shibo manigas elamay. So, the difference between midas harachmi and midas adin is as follows. When I use midas harachmi, I'm allowing you to set the agenda. For instance, you would like to have a suit, I give you a suit. You would like to have this, I give you this. Midas HaRachmim allows you to set the agenda and I'm replying to it. Midas HaDin, I set the agenda based on my understanding of what's appropriate and what's right and what you ought to get. I give it to you, mikoyach, my understanding. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. Rachmim is injected in the world And Rachmim is really the overarching mida, but the hanhaga of the world is through Gzeira. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says how much and what is appropriate to put in at this time. Rachmim is what would you like? What would you like makes you in the driver's seat? What's appropriate makes me in the driver's seat, and that should be the way it should go. So really, Midas Adin was the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to run the world, because that means everything is run by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's measure and scale and all of these things, except he needed Rachmim to help along. Just to clarify one point here, I probably mentioned it. It says Olam Chesed Yibaneh. It's three phases. The first phase, where nothing existed, cannot be Midas Hadin. If I never hired you to work, then I don't owe you anything. You can't come to me and say I'm applying for a job, and I'd like to be your accountant, and you owe it to me I should be your accountant, because if I have to work for you, I do something for you. Well, that's chasing the tail. If I decide to hire you, that's a Midas HaChesed, it's Rachmim of sorts. The job itself is a Midas HaDin job. Every hour of quality work that you do, you get paid X amount. So Midas HaDin could not have started the world, because when the clock was zero, no one had done anything to earn anything, and it's not possible that there could be Midas HaDin could not have brought the world into being. Like, Midas HaDin is not something that is mechayev to hire you. There was somebody in a yeshiva who wanted a job, and he was pushing very hard. Like, it's not fair, it's not right, I have the qualities, this and that. And I was trying to explain to the person, there's no logical basis for your argument. You know, if you were working and he underpays you, you can say, I've done X, Y, and Z, I deserve to be paid for X, Y, and Z. But to be hired, if you indicate that he must hire you, that's a fallacy. That's a terrible fallacy. And besides the fact that anyone has that attitude, nobody would want to hire someone like that. You know, like somebody said, I can't get rid of him before I hired him. Alachas kamza kama afterwards. It's not a good setup. So Kadosh Baruch Hu's first midah was certainly chesed. Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to expand and create a world. The next midah, then the ideal world, is a world which is run by Kadosh Baruch Hu's gzeira din, by his understanding and his evaluation what's right and what's wrong. But he saw, and also for us that's the best in a sense, because that's where we get what we deserve and we earn it and so on. HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized that that's setting up for failure, because everyone's going to mess up at some point, and if you have one strike and you're out, then everybody's out at some point. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chasdo injected a second midah of Rachmim, another midah of Rachmim, to allow the din to go on. But within the context of the world, one would be mispalta HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So to make HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midah, overarching midah, as Rachmim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a din, l'netzach, that a kent of Ken Sipur, that can't be an example of Rachmim. There has to be an akuda where this is din. This is the way it's appropriate that it ought to be. Like Rashi says, so it was because HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that you couldn't have a world just built with din, that he added Rachmim to it. So we're talking about the Rachmim that's in the world post Bri'asolo. In other words, din means this is appropriate. This is what's appropriate in the situation. It's what you deserve. So it's certainly is befitting that that be a Kodesh Baruch Hu's Hanhag in the big picture. So basically he's saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world in a way that's not ra'ui. It's not that there is a temporary injection of rachmim to help us tide over. It's like a person constantly using some machine on the emergency power pack. That's not appropriate. If you're always using it on emergency setting, then you're misusing it. It's got to be so when a person is being misfollowed, what a person is doing when he's misfollowed is he's anchoring his tefillah in Saman Hagavah Kashbarah that's wanted. So, let's give an example. When Avraham Avinu was misfollowed for Anshei Sdom, so he didn't just say, oh, Rabbi Shalom, have Rachmanis Anshei Sdom. He said, Hashifet Kol Ha'aretz Lo Ya'aseh Mishpat. He was saying like this, listen, you are Kadosh Baruch Hu, are the midah with which you run the world of Shevet Kol Ha'aretz. And part of the midah of mishpat is that the tzaddik not be nesav with the rasha. Midah of mishpat is discriminatory. It discriminates and it says rishoyim get bad, tzaddikim get good. It's not all encompassing. So a Shevet Kol Ha'aretz mishpat, I anchored in that. So when I'm mispalt HaKadosh Baruch Hu for good, and I say Ken Sipa Yagir Rachmecha, I'm implying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the midah with which you run the world on a normal basis, is Rachmim, and therefore, and the Raya is from Ken Sipa, and therefore extend Rachmim here. Well, that's wrong. Shayez HaKadosh Baruch Hu midas ve'enol gzeros means HaKadosh Baruch Hu's and Haggis are the derech klal are because it's right like that, not because it's necessary, but because it's right, and that's the ongoing hanhag of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if Ken Sipur is a mitzvah, not a one-time intervention of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's a mitzvah that's kayam, then Bal Karchach, that's part and parcel of some hanhag of did. Okay, we'll hold it here. Any questions?
Great. No, thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Shavua Tov. Good fun.
Shavua Tov. Thank you.
Bye.